that this increased militarization of police is really troubling, obviously. Yeah. And they were also very on edge, and then that made things more maybe quote-unquote safer, but what's your definition of safe if there's all these people that, you know. So you had that, and then you had the DNC, which was – there was way more protests. There was way more people. But also at the same time, I think after the RNC kind of was a little bit of a buzzkill, because I think a lot of reporters really were anticipating, and maybe even some were really hoping something bad would happen. I think they were. I mean, when I certainly spoke to photographers and other reporters there, they were really waiting for something to kind of happen.
Yeah.
So then they had, I think we were all kind of saddled with this narrative of what do we do with this? And oftentimes I think there's a lot of trying to find the narrative. So the narrative became these protests were bigger. And they were, especially, but it was mainly in opposition to Hillary Clinton and mainly these pro-Bernie Sanders rallies. So then you saw this tension between other concerns, such as Black Lives Matter, that often became sidelined or literally shouted over both outside and inside. And there's obviously a lot of crossover between Sanders supporters and other causes, but the Sanders supporters really dominated the conversation in a way that I thought was troubling and frustrating. They became deeply unsympathetic at a certain point. Just a really obvious example would be Elijah Cummings was speaking inside, and he invokes – he's talking about abortion rights and Black Lives Matter specifically, and there's Sanders delegates in there that are screaming, like, no TPP. It just seemed like
like, come on.
Yeah, maybe not the moment to do that.
Right,
so I guess I was trying to sort of focus on that and also focus – on a lot of the spectacle, which I think protests are really compelling when they have a spectacle or sort of entertainment element to it. So there were moments at the DNC that a lot of protesters, they picked up like a casket that had DNC written on it, and they sort of put it over the fence. And at the RNC, there's specifically a young man named Turner Fair that I was very entertained with. He was an activist with the Revolutionary Communist Party. And he operated as both kind of a frontliner or a soldier during protests in the sense of like helping people hold the line, passing out water, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the last night he sort of did this extended performance art piece that started with him sort of worshiping the video of Donald Trump that was being aired. At some point he put on a Confederate flag around his face and was marching around and like talking to the police in like a Southern accent. So there was kind of this interesting – it was almost as if – by Thursday, the RNC had gotten so absurd that like it was time to like sort of act out.
Yeah.
And whereas the DNC, the tensions were there and the tensions were more public. But I think that in short, I think that if you really try to set this narrative up that one had a stronger protest scene than the other, it kind of falls flat because mostly because I think that when one city is a police state, I think the kind of police state that Donald Trump would love to put the entire country in which there's people armed with weapons controlling everyone they decide are the bad guys at any moment. That's why he had that. And for journalists to sort of ignore that, I thought was really troubling. So I tried to highlight that in the piece.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that Karen Hoopert, I think, has a piece about Hillary Clinton's feminism that kind of ties in a little bit what you were saying. And she talks about how her feminism is troubling in a lot of ways, but also still very important in the context of this race. And I thought that was a really cool piece.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and that piece, I mean, and I'm guilty of it here now. And then I talk about the DNC for 10 minutes or 5 minutes here. And I don't mention Hillary Clinton much at all. I don't mention that, you know, this historic thing has happened. And my editor, Karen Hoopert, did a really excellent job of sort of unpacking that, but also challenging some of the binaries about femininity that the speech held up or almost maybe had to hold up, because that's still culturally where we're at.
Yeah, definitely.
She has to be a good mother and a hard worker. We can't find the ways in which those are the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, she talks a lot about the work-life balance. And I know that some other pieces that you guys have is Baynard Woods covers the Port Covington hearing.
Oh, yes, yes. And a very, very entertaining piece about the there was a hearing about Port Covington, which was supposed to be a public hearing that droned on and didn't actually hear from a lot of the public. And Baynard's, among the many quotable lines in it, and I'm going to misquote it, but his main point, I think, was if the city can't really organize a meeting about Port Covington, how the heck are they going to organize the actual Port Covington?
Deal. Exactly.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yeah, and there's also a really good piece by Michael Farley I just want to mention about Pokemon Go.
Yeah, and it relates to Guy Debord. I loved it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really nice.
Yeah, so check that as well.
Yeah, so that's Brennan Soderberg, deputy editor and arts editor for City Paper. Thank you so much for giving us a heads up.
Thank you.
Mark Steiner Show is